they are just going for their traditional patriarchal, the Bible taken literally, horror of a Christian theocratic fascist state. It's not a long game anymore. I think they're really like trying to accelerate and get this done as quickly as possible. There has been such a failure to confront what it is that these fascists are after, what kind of society they want to hammer into place, and that they're not backing down and they're not going to stop. And what kind of opposition does that require? There needs to be a connected, united response from the decent people. Protest that destabilizes the status quo, that really gets people thinking about what's happening and why it's happening and fills them with that determination and fury. That's the kind of protest we need. When people get into the streets fighting for our interests, our values of diversity, for justice, then there is a potential to change the whole game.
Welcome to episode 153 of the Refuse Fascism podcast, a podcast brought to you by volunteers with Refuse Fascism. I'm Sam Goldman, one of those volunteers and host of the show. Refuse Fascism exposes, analyzes, and stands against the very real danger and threat of fascism coming to power in the United States. In today's episode, we're sharing a chat Coco Das and I had yesterday about this past week's developments. For those who listen regularly, you know that Coco is a frequent guest host, and fellow member of the Refuse Fascism editorial board. She is also just the best at both clarifying what's going on and why, and challenging you when you need to be. We talk about SCOTUS preserving the status quo of mifepristone access, Trump not being anti-abortion enough for Christian fascists, what's driving the fever pitch in the assault on LGBTQ rights, are we seriously just leaving it to trans folks to prevent their erasure, how protest makes a difference, the Texas Senate advancing legislation to put the Ten Commandments into schools, Abbott pardoning the murder of Garrett Foster, and so much more. Before we get into it, thanks to everyone who goes the extra step and rates and reviews the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If you appreciate the show and want to help us reach more people who want to refuse fascism, be a gem and go write a review and drop 5 stars wherever you listen to your pods. I really can't overemphasize what a difference this makes. Please tell the people out there in podcast land why you listen, and they should too. Subscribe, follow, so you never miss an episode. And of course, keep up all that great commenting, sharing on the social media. Thank you as well to everyone on Patreon for supporting the show for $2 or more a month. Thanks, patrons. Not one yet? Become one at patreon.com/refusefascism. So yes, again, after listening, go do all the things to help us reach more folks that want to refuse fascism. Coco and I cover a lot of ground in the episode, but there's one development from this past week that I left out. I mean, there's more than one, but I want to mention one briefly. The latest in the case of, will corporations stand up to fascism? People hoped that the Dominion voting defamation case against the fascist news network, Fox News, would force accountability for their promotion of the big lie. But Dominion took a bag of cash, and the peddlers of hate and lies are back to business as usual with no real admission of wrongdoing. We acknowledge the court's rulings finding certain claims about Dominion to be false, Fox News said in their statement. They are poised to do the same thing in the future, perhaps opting for dog whistles instead of megaphones, but I'm not convinced. With that, here is my conversation with Coco. This was a really, really crazy week for humanity. I feel like the Christian fascists continue to advance, and too many of the decent people are putting their heads in the sand. To me, that means that I need to talk to my friend and fellow Refuse Fascism editorial board member who frequently lends her brilliance to the show, Coco Das, thank you for chatting with us about this past week. We're going to go through some of the headlines and just kind of break it down a little bit. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I feel the same way.
Let's start with what a lot of people are waking up feeling a little bit lighter. Last night, the Supreme Court, in what seems like a 7-2 ruling, paused abortion bill restrictions from taking effect during the appeals process. And what that does is it preserves the status quo of availability of mifepristone. The legal battle will continue over mifepristone in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals on Wednesday, May 17th. But in the meantime, access remains as it was. And so I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on this, both what you are thinking and what you think is needed in terms of people's understanding in this moment. I have some thoughts too, but I wanted to hear from you first.
I think, yes, it's a good thing that the Supreme Court didn't uphold Kaczmarek's ruling, which would have taken mifepristone off the market. This is temporary. It's going to be going back through the Fifth Circuit. And even the Fifth Circuit ruling that had come down upheld a lot of, you know, very damaging rulings about this case and would have limited a lot of the access to mifepristone. One thing is, this is that it's upholding the status quo in states where abortion is legal. And there are many states, Texas being one of them, where abortion is not legal. I'm still trying to sort out, what does this mean for women in Texas? And what does it mean for women nationwide? Certainly being able to get mifepristone here so that women don't have to travel out of state. That's an important service. But the fact remains that we are living in a moment where Christian fascists are really going for the whole thing. They are not going to be satisfied with this being a state-by-state question. That's bullshit. They want female enslavement across the land, where women do not have access to abortion, don't have the right to make their own decisions about when and if they're going to have children, and what that means for women's lives, their place in society, their ability to participate fully, to fulfill their dreams. We know what's happening on the ground in these states where abortion is legal, where women are being like forced to bleed out and in horrific pain because they can't get miscarriage care. It's just an all-out punishment of women, as you've said in other podcast episodes. Maybe we can call it a speed bump on the road to Christian fascist consolidation, but that's all it is. And people need to wake up to the reality.
I really think that that's a helpful way of looking at it. One of the things that I was reading this morning, Mary Ziegler, who is a legal scholar who focuses on reproductive rights, but her legal expertise is broader than that, but she does focus on reproductive rights. And she had written in response to this one thing that I think was helpful. She wrote, quote, "The court stepped back in this latest order, preserving the pre-lawsuit status quo when it comes to mifepristone. But we can read only so much into the court's decision. For 50 years, anti-abortion rights groups have shown that they are willing to play the long game. And with a court as conservative as this one, they have no reason to cease their efforts," end quote. And I thought that that was a helpful reminder in this idea of like this speed bump, if you will, that you were pointing to and where they're really going. We've talked about this before on the show. What they're going for is an all-out nationwide ban on all abortion, and that everything that they're doing right now is in service of that goal. And we can expect that this will be back before the Supreme Court, probably by the fall. So this isn't done. Even while, again, this is a sigh of relief for everyone who needs this access right now. And I don't want to discount that while also making clear that this battle isn't over. It's not done.
I'm not sure it's now, with more of them in power, with the way that Trump transformed the judiciary, it's not a long game anymore. I think they're really like trying to accelerate and get this done as quickly as possible without taking their eyes off that ultimate goal. They're not backing down, I think, is the point of that. We have to understand what they're going for. And there just has not been the equivalent of that kind of determination and even the understanding of this fundamental right to abortion, why it's so important for the role of women in society. the reproductive rights movement under the wing of the Democratic Party has been all over the place. And I think there's been such a failure to confront what it is that these fascists are after, what kind of society they want to hammer into place, and that they're not backing down and they're not going to stop. And what kind of opposition does that require?
Precisely. And what kind of people are we that we look at them preserving a quote unquote status quo of access? The New York Times, I think, said preserve or restores broad access to the pill. And it's like broad access to where? Mm-hmm. To what rural communities? To what women living on the res? When such a crumb, such a case that shouldn't have even been before the Supreme Court gets ruled remotely favorably, people are like trained to cheer. And it's heartbreaking to me about how normalized this assault has become. When you were talking about what kind of resistance or what kind of response is this required, there's what Biden said last night. And I just want to read part of it, which was, let me say this. I'll continue to fight attacks on women's health. The American people must also continue to use their vote as their voice and elect a Congress that will restore the protections of Roe v. Wade.
First off, using your vote as your voice. That's it. Don't flood the streets. Don't
use your voice.
Don't use your voice. Use your vote as your voice. Yeah. Don't yell in the street and get together with other people and raise hell in like a nonviolent civil disobedience or mass protest, which is actually the way that any social justice and any right has been won for oppressed people in this country. And women are oppressed people. This also infuriated me. And it's time to stop relying on people like this or this institution of the Democratic Party. They've had 50 years to codify Roe and didn't do it. They're not going to call their base out into the streets to use their voice. This is not going to win us what badly needs to be won, which is nationwide legal abortion.
Yeah, the only thing I would add, Coco, is like, as we've talked on the show a lot about, we are confronted with a Republifascist party that is in no way bound to the norms that have operated in this country for over a century. What do people think January 6th was about? It was about not accepting a loss. These fuckers don't care about, quote unquote, the will of the people or whatever, or about your vote. They've showed that they're going to suppress it. They're going to gerrymander it. And if they can't use legal means, they'll use extra legal means. If that's what you're up against and your only thing is vote, that's what you're telling people to do as people's lives are being destroyed right now, yeah. As over 5,000 women right now are being forced to give birth against their will each month. What? That's what you're telling people to do? It's sickening. If you just look at abortion and not the host of other attacks on the people in relation to restricting voting, I don't think personally that voting is the mechanism for change. I do defend both people's right to vote. But if you look at Ohio, Ohio is advancing measures to make it harder for voters to pass an abortion rights amendment. And Ohio isn't the only place that this is happening, where people are being told, well, there can be ballot measures and voting is a losing issue for the GOP. They actually have something that they can do about that. They can take away your ability to vote on it. And that's what we're seeing. I think that that underscores your point of we have to confront what we're up against in totality. And that part of that includes that the so-called opposition party can't be relied on to solve this, that they have showed that they aren't incapable of doing that.
I agree with everything you just said.
I just am so like, it's not frustrated is the word, like abortion is a winning issue for the Democrats. I really wish that they'd fucking act like it that you see on social media, or GOP is losing on abortion. GOP just loves losing.
They're not losing on abortion in Texas. They're not losing on abortion in states where 22 million women have no right to abortion. It's cynical and disgusting, but in the main, it's not true. And it's not because the majority of people agree with them about abortion. It doesn't matter that the majority of people don't agree.
I think that that's the key thing, because I think when people are saying that, when that is the analysis, I think people are looking to the base and the fact that the majority of people want there to be abortion rights. They think that because something is unpopular, it is therefore a losing strategy.
Also, what this doesn't take into account is that this program and this hollowed out Republican Party that's, you know, become fully fascist, people are united around the whole program, even if they have differences on various parts of it. So we've talked to, there were many young people who came through the Texas Rise Up for Abortion Rights, and they were all talking about how they came from these very conservative backgrounds and at some point understood or came to a better understanding about abortion and became pro-choice. Many of them talked about how their families were on the fence. They didn't support total bans on abortions. They even were supportive of some of the activism that these kids were doing, but it was not going to change their vote because they're voting for a whole program. They're voting for the white supremacy. They're voting for the Christian fascism. They're voting for that vision of society as opposed to where they feel society is going right now. There's just so much wrong with that conceit that it's a losing issue.
This is an AP story. Meg Kinnard came out yesterday. Anti-abortion group blasts Trump over federal ban comments. A major anti-abortion group, Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life, responded to a statement by the Trump campaign spokesperson about division among the 2024 GOP presidential field on abortion-related issues. And they said it would not support any White House candidate who did not, at a minimum, support a 15-week federal abortion ban. Their news release said, quote, "The Supreme Court made it clear in its decision that it was returning the issue to the people to decide through their elected representatives in the states and in Congress. Holding to the position that it is exclusively up to the states is an abdication of responsibility by anyone to elected office," end quote.
I mean, I think what we're seeing here is even the top dog fascist might not be fascist enough for some of these really lunatic extremists in the base. You know, we'll see. I think we're going to talk a little bit about Garrett Foster and Abbott's pardon. You saw something similar there, where you have Trump, who was willing to tear up all the norms, transform the Republican Party. Then you have an entire movement where the furthest extremes really going for a theocracy, really going for a fascist consolidation, really going for all the things that they talk about, that the woman belongs in the home as mother and wife, that Black people better know their place. LGBTQ people need to be erased. They need to not exist in society. There's a section that is emboldened to really push for that to be consolidated and hammered into place as soon as possible. I think they see an existential crisis in a way that really more of us should see the existential crisis where, you know, this is part of why people were so fanatically devoted to Trump. They saw this as their last chance to hammer this society that they want into place. I don't think Donald Trump personally has the same views on abortion. He's a fascist, narcissist leader, and he has gotten pushed farther and farther.
As some people have called it, the race to the bottom.
The race to the bottom, yeah.
I think what it does is gives more evidence to our claim that what they are going for is a nationwide abortion ban, and they aren't going to stop till they have it. The notion that you can wait and you can rely on the courts or on voting in your state to protect, you know, an enclave of abortion rights is a deadly strategy because they are going for it all. To me, that's the takeaway. I wanted to get a sense from you on people that are listening to what we just talked about. How can we take action? Does our protest around this make any difference if they don't care about the lives of women?
I think it does matter the kind of protest. If the aim of that protest is to just spill out your emotions so you can go back to your life, protest isn't a form of therapy. If it's just to register voters and tell people, wait, okay, now take your fury, go home and sit on it till November. No, that's not the kind of protest that matters at all. But protest that destabilizes the status quo that really gets people thinking about what's happening and why it's happening and fills them with that determination and fury. That's the kind of protest we need. You need sustained protests. You need to be willing to keep coming back and not back down from your demand. You need a lot of people. And right now we don't have a lot of people. And part of that is because of the way that the system works on people, the collapse of the reproductive rights movement. You know, even now when they're like calling people into the streets, they haven't made the case of why, or it's just channeled into the elections. And this is not inspiring millions of people to come back out into the streets. And what protest does when it is inspiring, when it does have a critical mass, when it does keep coming back, and when it does bring out the truth of what's going on, that creates a political crisis of legitimacy. It shows that emperor has no clothes. It calls out the complete moral and political and intellectual and how abject that program is, and how the people in power do not have an answer to what's going on. When the people who are in power are faced with that kind of crisis of legitimacy, sometimes, often, they have to concede to the demands of the people in the interest of getting back to the stability of their society. And that's why the civil rights protests were so important. That was how you got the end of Jim Crow, was through that kind of protest. How did we get the right to abortion? It was women burning their bras, women like carrying their coat hangers and raising bloody hell. Time after time, there are examples of what kind of protest is needed and how that makes an impact on all of society. It also generates controversy, and that causes people to start discussing this in their workplace, at schools. So what we're doing a little later is we're taking bloody sheets and we're covering the steps of the federal courthouse in Austin later. And this is for all the 5,000 women a month being forced to give birth against their will, for the women who are being forced to bleed out, come to the brink of death before they'll get any miscarriage care, for the girls and the women who are going to become increasingly suicidal or take desperate measures to end their unwanted pregnancies. So we're trying to bring out that this is the blood of women on the hands of these Christian fascist judges. We need to be in the streets everywhere demanding the restoration of legal nationwide abortion.
And we will definitely be sharing on our social media photos from it so that people can do it in their own cities, towns, campuses. I think that it is really important and something that can be replicated elsewhere. I'm so glad that y'all are doing it. Since we've been talking about this Christian fascism, that we could stay on that for a little bit, because there was other examples of it advancing this week. One is Texas specific as well. I'm taking the Guardian headline. Texas lawmakers advance bill to force schools to display 10 commandments. State senators advance a bill that is a basic violation of separation of church and state. This is from The Guardian, Richard Luscombe. Quote, every classroom in Texas could be made to display the Ten Commandments prominently after lawmakers advanced a proposal to push more religion into schools. A parallel bill, also approved by the Republican-controlled Texas Senate on Thursday, would require educational establishments to set aside time every day for students and employees to read the Bible or other religious manuscripts or to pray, end quote.
This is horrifying. It's this bill.
But it's unconstitutional, Coco.
It's unconstitutional. Yes.
Didn't the Supreme Court rule that you can't display the Ten Commandments and have prayer time in school? So this doesn't have a chance, right?
Well, I believe that there was a recent ruling from the Supreme Court that did open this possibility up. And I can't remember what that ruling was, but
the Kennedy case. In the Kennedy case, a football coach prayed on the football court involving students. I could go longer into it, but to keep it brief, that's basically what it was. Yeah. And the court ruled that it was private, even though it was very public, and therefore it was acceptable. And it kind of opened the door to more of the encroachments on this separation.
It's not inconceivable that this could go through. And the influence of this hardcore Christian fascist base and the politicians in power. Greg Abbott is a Christian fascist. Dan Patrick is, you know, and the legislature is full of these Christian fascists. It's not inconceivable that it can't go through and that it will continue to influence education here in Texas, which is already heavily influenced by the Christian fascists and the white supremacy, suppressing the actual history of Texas as a refuge for slaveholders, suppressing the history of, you know, what the fight at the Alamo was about, all this stuff. It could go through, but it's also just in itself is making a statement that they do not see any limits on their influence and their power. It's so twisted. They don't give a shit that these kids in Uvalde were gunned down. They don't give a shit about that. They don't care that you have to face this kind of terror. People are even scared to send their kids to school. Kids are terrified of going to school. And they think that putting the Ten Commandments up, that is what's going to be the moral compass of society. Just again, more evidence that we have to wake up to the theocratic, the Christian fascist threat. They are not stopping. They don't care if you think it's outrageous or you think that they can't get away with that. They're going to try and they might succeed.
Looking at courts, that the higher up you go, the more they're stacked with fascists, the more they're dominated by fascists, is not a winning strategy as they are catapulting further towards theocracy. A lot of these things are test cases to see how far they can push it. Again, how far are we going to go to push back, not to just get past things back to the status quo, but to push them all the way back, to stop this assault entirely? That's just kind of what it makes me think of. There is what can only be called a fever pitch in the assault on LGBTQ rights. This has been going on all year, really. According to HRC, over 500 anti-LGBTQ bills have been introduced in state legislators just in this year alone. And this is a record. Over 210 bills specifically targeting transgender and non-binary people, also a record. And 34 anti-LGBTQ laws have been enacted so far this year, including laws banning life-saving gender-affirming care. And that would be like the top laws that have been passed. The rate of these anti-LGBTQ bills in state houses across this country is more this year than in each of the previous 5 years. And there is a focus on the most Nazi-esque efforts to prevent trans youth from living their lives, accessing age-appropriate medical and necessary best practice healthcare. And this is in addition to their bathroom bills, their sports bills. That is the overall landscape. And then just this week, Florida expanded Don't Say Gay through 12th grade. Over in Montana, Montana's House Speaker has silenced Representative Zoe Zephyr, a transgender lawmaker, who rightly said that she won't apologize for saying that lawmakers would have quote unquote blood on their hands if they passed a ban on gender affirming healthcare. She was silenced for 2 days so far in sessions that have a direct impact on transgender rights and healthcare. Florida, again, codified the seizing of children from their parents. Parents who are or may be suspected of being at risk for providing care to their children. This could include seizing cisgender children from parents. Again, this bounty kind of hunting of people. Missouri had launched this week. I think it is now down due to protests, but they have launched a new form on their website to report transgender individuals and those who help them to the government. These are just some of the stories from this past week of the harm that is being inflicted with genocidal aims. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on what's happening and why is it at such a speed and fever pitch right now?
I mean, it's so much violence. It is genocidal. It's aimed at eliminating this population, not just sending them back into the closet, but actually like eliminating them. Taking children away from their parents who are trying to help their children survive and be happy. I mean, this is just heart-wrenching. I think it's at a fever pitch because of so much that has come before that has just unleashed and emboldened this movement to even not give up any pretenses that they want to respect the rule of law or they care about children or any of that. They are just going for their traditional patriarchal, the Bible taken literally, horror of a Christian theocratic fascist state. And these are all also test cases to see how far they can go. It's a domino effect. They're all like trying to outdo each other in the cruelty of their laws. It's transforming all of society. It's transforming the culture where you have this very violent, gunned up base that is also ready to enforce. One, they're ready to believe everything that their leaders say. It's full of anti-science, you know, genocidal lying and also lying, untrue rhetoric. Transgender people have become the main scapegoat right now of these Christian fascist lunatics. You're unleashing this permission to be as hateful and violent as you want against people that they don't think should be seen as people. One thing that I'm wrestling with is all of these things are related to each other. They're fights in their own right, the fight for trans rights, the fight for the right to abortion, the fight for voting rights. But all of these assaults are coming from this united fascist movement. Not that they agree on everything, but they're united in these assaults and going for what they want in society. There needs to be a connected, united response from the decent people. And, you know, I think that's something we need to wrestle with. What does it look like? And it's great that there have been protests, you know, against some of these bills and transgender people and allies coming into the state houses. But it needs to be much broader than that. It really needs to be a society-wide reckoning that's not existing right now.
I also think that when it comes to refuse fascism, one of the things that I appreciate about the analysis that was first brought forward when we were founded and was that it operates on a triad. They are connected and they are their own legs, if you will. You know, there's the white supremacy, the vicious xenophobia, American chauvinism, and there's the patriarchy. And the fascist movements foment and rely upon those to advance and consolidate power. And there's a interesting, it is long, piece put out by the Southern Poverty Law Center. I was reading it this week on, I want to get the title right, Male Supremacy is at the Core of the Hard Rights Agenda. And the piece is full of research wrangling with this as a pole that has been often neglected, that there's been more recognition and understanding of this vicious white supremacy that is propelling this movement. And one of the factors that hasn't been looked at is the violent patriarchy that you are speaking to is violent. The violence that is forced motherhood comes from the same place as the violent denial of gender-affirming care, is the same place that comes from this anti-drag bans. All of that is, there's the same source. And while they do need to be fought in their own right, I do agree that this recognizing of what unites it and where this is coming from, and that it is part of a fascist program, I think is something that needs to be spread and then acted upon. And when you look at the protests that have occurred in response to these genocidal bans on gender-affirming care, or the bans at school levels from children participating in sport, you know, cruel, cruel shit that's happening, you mainly see those who identify as transgender or non-binary. You see parents of those affected. I mean, you see really bold shit. Like at one of these, I think it might've been Florida. I'm sorry if I got the state wrong, y'all. A young person injected themselves with hormone therapy on the thing and talked about how this was saving their life. Like stuff that gives you chills, that makes you cry. And it's wonderful that people are putting skin in the game because their skin's in the game already. But I'm sorry, y'all. It's got to be all of us. Mm-hmm. And it's too much of that's their fight and not enough of these are our people. We need to fight this all the way and beat this back. And that's just my personal thoughts on it. I'm not exactly sure what that looks like. I don't have a program, but we got to learn a little bit from history on how this goes down and not make mistakes that we should have learned from. We've been talking about violence and the Christian fascist movement advancing and people not rising up. As we do that, you know, I just think about people that do see themselves in the larger struggle. And even if they aren't directly affected, have risen up. And one of those people was Garrett Foster, who participated in the uprising for Black Lives and was killed for doing so. And just recently, the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, put out a vow to pardon the killer of Garrett Foster. And I think that we need to talk a little bit more about this and both what this means for quote unquote legitimizing the murder of protesters and what we need to be seeing about this rabid fascism that's on the move.
Yeah. So first, for people who don't know about this case, Garrett Foster is a white man. He had gone to, I think, around 50 protests for Black Lives Matter in Austin, the summer of 2020, when the whole country was rising up after the murder of George Floyd. And he would go with his fiance, who was a quadruple amputee. They had been together since high school. She had gotten a virus, had developed an illness. And I think they had been together a year and had to have all four of her limbs amputated. And he, by all accounts, just a devoted, loving individual, a very caring person. And this is a person who saw an injustice and he went out in the streets day after day, all through the summer of 2020. And at one of these protests, this rabidly racist Army sergeant and rideshare driver who had been tweeting and messaging about killing protesters for several weeks, drove into one of these protests. Now, in Texas, there's open carry is legal. So Garrett Foster had a rifle, which was his right to do. The Daniel Perry drove into the crowd. Garrett Foster asked him to lower his window so they could talk. The crowd stopped the car. And in that confrontation where Daniel Perry sometimes said the gun was pointed at him, sometimes said it wasn't. In his initial statement, didn't say that the gun was pointed at him, said he was afraid that that gun was going to be aimed at him that Garrett Foster was carrying. But very quickly, you know, this wasn't a long conversation that went on, shot and killed Garrett Foster. So a jury in Austin, in Travis County, just found, based on carefully considered evidence, I think it was like almost 2 weeks of trial, 17 hours of deliberation, decided that Daniel Perry was guilty of murder. He has not even been sentenced yet. The sentence hearing was going to be happening after the verdict was announced. But that very night, the verdict was announced, and then Tucker Carlson, even getting more rabidly fascist and white supremacist, went on and sort of challenged Greg Abbott to pardon Daniel Perry. The trial proceedings are still ongoing. There's a huge lawlessness to saying that you're going to, you know, push a pardon board to recommend a pardon. And then before the trial's even done, before the sentencing has even happened, I'm going to promise to pardon. I don't know what Abbott would have done without Carlson's segment. You know, he's very perfectly like active fascist in his own right. He has run Texas as a fascist laboratory for 8 years. He's made plenty of fascist moves that smack in the face of the rule of law and due process. But in this case, the very next day, Abbott said he's going to push for this pardon. It's just extremely ominous on so many levels. Even more evidence has come out since the verdict of Perry's just vicious, violent racism. He, referring to Black Lives Matter protesters and Black people as monkeys, you pardon somebody like this, it's open season on protesters and all of the, you know, white supremacist vigilantes who want to go out and just kill people that they hate. I think it's also just an indication of how this fascist movement has this momentum and has this beast that keeps getting more and more horrific and more openly violent and is preparing the ground for civil war. I want to say there's a very good video segment on last Thursday's RNL Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube based on an article that was in revcom.us about this case. Why was it in 2020 that Trump And this fascist movement was put on the defensive by these protests. Not that the protests were necessarily aimed at them, but it was a political crisis. And then they really felt a need to crush them, and they unleashed their social base to violently suppress these protests. So there's a lot to go into about what this meant. But Kyle Rittenhouse going and killing two protesters, shooting three, all this had a chilling effect on the protests. And so there's just a lot on the line, the right to protest. And they're not talking about protecting their quote unquote protesters, the January 6th rioters. Ashley Babbitt is a martyr to them. But to them, Garrett Foster is a race traitor and doesn't deserve to live. And they feel that about any of the people who stand up for justice who are opposed to their program.
I really appreciate that breakdown, Coco. And I also wanted to add that the Democrats, in response to when this was going down in that summer, but also now when the fascists don't hold power in the White House and whatnot, they have wanted the police to be the force that suppresses the protesters instead of the vigilantes at a time that people were rising up to protest police violence and murder by the police. It kind of makes you dizzy. The Democrats, I think we do have to have people think about that they are very, very, very scared to take these fascists that are gunned to the teeth, this fascist base, they're very afraid to take them on. And they are very afraid of what they will do. And they don't want anyone to take this on. And what that does is that seeds the discourse, it seeds the streets, it seeds the political fight to those who are gunned to the teeth, dripping in their white supremacy, in their American chauvinism, in their patriarchy to further advance. And that's just my thought. They are living in fear of this fascist base as this fascist base gets more violent, gets more revengeous, and is called out by their Tucker Carlsons to not put down their AR-15s.
I think they're living in fear of the fascist base and their own base. You know, that's the tragic thing here, is that in the way that the Republicans are very happy to call out their base, to get in the streets, use any means that's available to hammer in their program. For many reasons, main reason being that the Democrats, their job is to maintain this empire, maintain the stability of the system, and maintain America's position as top dog. And their main job is not to even stop fascist consolidation in this country. Their main job is to protect the empire and advance the empire. And they have disagreements with the Republicans on how to do that. Their main job is not to look out for the rights of their base. And, you know, I think people need to get into this and why. And, you know, why do we like tear our hair out looking at the Democrats and why they're doing certain things? It's because they're doing their job. It's not their job, actually, to look out for our best interest. That's our job. It's up to us. It was such a beautiful uprising. You know, something beautiful came out of something horrific, and it shows potential of what can happen. Not that they went all the way, not that they won. They did win the conviction of George Floyd's killer, and it reset the terms in society for a short period of time. But it shows the potential of, you know, when people get into the streets fighting for our interests, our values of diversity, for justice, to stop killing Black people in the streets, stop killing us, stop doing these things, then there is a potential actually to change the whole game.
Thank you, Coco, for coming and chatting with me and helping us process this past week of confusing and horrifying news. I wanted to give you a moment if there's anything that we didn't talk about or anything else that you wanted to say.
Just keep digging. You know, I want to say to the audience, just keep digging for what is underlying all this. If we know what the root of it is, what these fascists are going for, then use that as a way to act. And don't retreat into your houses or bury your heads in the sands, because if that happens, we have no chance.
Thank you so much again, Coco. You can follow Coco on Twitter at Coco_Das. Check out her writing at refusefascism.org. Thanks, Coco.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks for listening to Refuse Fascism. We want to hear from you. Share your thoughts, questions, ideas for topics or guests, or lend a skill. Yes, I'm still on Twitter for now, even though it is turning into more of a dumpster fire each day. Tweet me at Sam B. Goldman. Drop me a line at SamanthaGoldman@refusefascism.org. Head on over to Mastodon and find us there. There's a link in the show notes. We'll probably be doing more on our Mastodon. You can also, of course, leave us a voicemail. See the link in the show notes to do just that. We'd love to hear from you. Want to support the show? It's simple. Show us some love by rating and reviewing on Apple Podcasts or your listening platform of choice. And of course, follow, subscribe so you never miss an episode. Become a patron to support our pod and content creation to help people understand and act to stop the fascist threat. Help us for as little as $2 a month. You can be part of producing and promoting this independent weekly podcast. Become a patron of the show for $5 a month and you'll gain access to invite-only events. And if you really value the show and it's within reach to support at $25 a month, you get a beanie, a shout out on the show, and the previously mentioned perks. So I hope you can give today at patreon.com/refusefascism. You can also make a one-time contribution by visiting refusefascism.org and hitting the donate button. Thanks in advance for your support. Thanks to Richie Marini, Lena Thorne, and Coco Das for helping produce this episode. Thanks to incredible volunteers, we have transcripts available for each show. So be sure to visit refusefascism.org and sign up to get them in your inbox. We'll be back next Sunday. Until then, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.